93X presents the Celebration Rock Podcast with Stephen Hayden.
This is the Celebration Rock Podcast presented by 93X FM here in Minneapolis. I'm your host, Stephen Hayden. Youth has always been a core component of rock and roll. Young people form rock bands, young people buy rock records and go to rock shows, and the best rock songs typically articulate the primary desires of the young, i.e. sex, drugs, and more rock and roll. And then there's a band like Modern Baseball, a pop-punk quartet from Philadelphia, whose members all hover around the age of 22. On great records like 2014's You're Gonna Miss It All, songwriters Brendan Lukens and Jake Ewald specialize in writing about that tricky period of life when you're no longer a kid, but not really a grown-up yet. While their songs are a lot of fun and sometimes downright funny, the humor usually masks a deeper despair. By mixing good times with melancholy, Modern Baseball capture what it's truly like to be a young adult. I met up with Lukens and Ewald when Modern Baseball played an all-ages venue outside of Minneapolis back in November. The band had just released an EP, The Perfect Cast, for free online, after finishing up work on its highly anticipated new album, Holy Ghost, which will be out later this year. Before we get to our conversation, I need to point this out. Brendan is the guy with the infectious laugh, while Jake talks in a somewhat lower voice. And of course, I'm the guy who's asking questions. You got it? Okay, let's go. Here's Modern Baseball.
So, do you guys play a lot of all-ages venues?
Yeah,
we like.
I think we get a little grumpy when we don't.
Sometimes we get stuck with like an 18 plus or something like that, but we rarely, rarely ever do a 21 plus show.
Yeah, and if we do, it's usually overseas.
And why is that?
I think it just comes down to when we were going to shows and they weren't all ages, we were like, what the hell? Yeah. And seeing as how we're still pretty young, we don't want anyone to be like ostracized for any reason from our show. So,
totally. Like when we first started going to shows in Philly, that was when there were so many house shows, but also there's so many bars around there.
Yeah.
So like half the shows we would go to were really cool, and like they were all ages at somebody's house. But then you would hear of like the same cool band playing like the next week, and you couldn't go because you were 20, and it was like, I just saw this band. That's not fair at all.
How old were you guys when you first started going to shows?
We went to see the Mount Airy Fire Hall.
Yeah.
When we were, well, you were a year older than I was.
How old were you?
That was probably my senior year in high school.
So you were what, 17?
Yeah.
So I was 18. Probably 17 as well.
Yeah.
Because we went to shows the year prior. So you were probably 16.
Yeah, probably 16. Mount Airy Fire Hall. At angsty age, you know.
16, 17, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's when you first started going to shows. Like, what was there a particular show or band, or it could be a record or anything, that made you want to be in a band? Mm-hmm.
Say Anything was a really big one for us, because when we first started Modern Baseball, we wanted to kind of branch out of the music that was being played in our hometown, which was like pretty straightforward pop punk. And we just wanted quirkiness, and we wanted tongue-in-cheek, and we wanted, like, sarcastic two-faced lyrics to people, and Say Anything was that blessing and curse. Yeah. That was just like, hey, we do that.
All the weird stuff that you want to digest right here.
So I think for me, for maybe us even, when we saw Say Anything, Motion City Soundtrack, Saves the Day, and a great big pile of leaves, that was kind of like when we were like, we should do this band thing.
Yeah. That was really cool.
And then last year we toured with them.
Yeah,
it was crazy. Like, what was it about, you know, all those things you just mentioned, like, you know, the sort of, you know, humor mixed with pathos? I mean, that's definitely what you guys do.
Yeah.
Like, what was it about that really connected with you guys?
I think for me, just because I had never heard it before, honestly. It's like, it was just so surprising to me that, I don't know. In a way, it was easier to digest because you didn't have to be in a really serious mindset to listen to it. But also, since it was so like intricate with the humor and all the quirkiness and stuff, it was like appealing right off the bat. But also, the longer you listen to it, the more different little things you could pick out, and you kind of got something new every time. So Yeah, it's a weird combination of those things for me, at least.
Yeah, I would say the exact same thing. That and being raised as a very polite kid, hearing someone like say anything, like yeah. talk crap about someone, like not to their face, but to their face, I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. Definitely a lot of like, wow, you can talk like this, but still say thank you. Like, yeah.
I mean, how long have you guys known each other?
Wow, 6 years?
Probably something like that. Yeah, 6 years.
We met
4 years of college, 2 years of high school.
Yep. So you met around the same time you started going to shows together?
Yep.
Yeah.
I really started going to shows because of him.
So. I mean, was it just because like you were like the rock kids in school? Is that how you ended up connected? You're laughing, but I mean, just sort of like that mutual interest in music, is that what you connected over?
No, actually, I was dating his twin sister.
Oh.
She was always like, Brendan plays guitar and he like really wants to play guitar with you and blah, blah, blah.
And then we did that.
That was like kind of the only reason we met.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Well, you, because I always saw you as an athletic guy because you were on the soccer team and I wasn't athletic at all. Yeah. So I was like,
well, you were on the track team. Give yourself some credit.
I ran winter track. I did pole vault. But I was definitely the least able person on the track team. And I did that because my friend in seventh grade didn't want to do pole vault by himself. So I did it with him. That was Nathan Diaz. Yes.
We definitely didn't meet through music. It was more so like a, hey, we both do this music thing. That's weird. Maybe we could do this together instead of apart.
Yeah.
So you said you're dating his twin sister. Like, is it like identical twins? I was gonna say, because it'd be like, oh, it's like I love you. You look like a girl I'm attracted to. But you're a guy I could be in a band with. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was not like a full and little situation.
That would have been great. A way better story.
Yeah. We're all in the band together.
Yeah.
That'd be wild.
We were just dating, and then we became best friends, and then we broke up, and then we stayed best friends, and everyone's happy.
and
his mom is very happy.
And that process of, like, you know, collaborating and being in a band and writing songs, did you start doing that right away? Was that something you found pretty natural?
Honestly, yeah. It was pretty much like, hey, this is what I have. Jake was like, this is what I have. And we kind of started writing together. Realized that wasn't our cup of tea pretty much right away, just because we enjoyed that time alone to write.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of were just like, well, I'm going to write what I want to write, and you write when you want to write. And they sound pretty similar, so we could probably stick with this.
And we would, like, send phone demos to each other and, like, record stuff on our laptop microphones and go back and forth.
GarageBand.
Yeah. Thank you, GarageBand. It was cool.
And at what point did you start to feel like you were getting good at this, or at least good enough that you wanted other people to hear what you were doing?
I think that took the most time. A lot of it was we wanted it so badly that we were willing to look past how nervous we are and how we didn't feel ready. We weren't sure if it was the time for us to put out all this music or not, but we wanted to do it, and we were dedicated to that.
Yeah. The time we did Sports, we had, like, so many songs. Like, more than an album's worth of songs that we had worked on together.
Yeah.
So it was, like, it was kind of weird looking back on it that we didn't do it earlier, but we were just making all these songs, being like, well, this is cool for us.
Yeah.
For ourselves.
But... yeah, actually, today is 3 years of Sports being released, our first
album. Oh, really?
Yeah. And thinking back to then, even, is like, that was 3 years ago? Wow.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, I was going to say, I was listening to You're Gonna Miss It All on the drive over here, and I know, like, when I first heard that record, what I responded to was that it reminded me of a specific moment in my life, which is now, like, about 15, 20 years in my rear view. But, you know, like, teens going into 20s.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you guys are only a few years removed from that, but I'm wondering, like, is it already weird to look back on those songs, like Sports, even the last record?
Yep.
You change a lot from, like, 23 to 21, or...
Yeah, right? And with us going into our new record, we feel like we've changed a lot from, like, what you just said, 21 to 23, even. It's just, like, such a big gap.
Yeah. And because we write so specifically a lot of the time, it's like, if you listen to a song, it's... at least for us, when we listen back to our own songs, not even just thinking back to that age, but thinking back to like the moment that you wrote that song about.
Yeah.
So it's weird. And then thinking like, sometimes like if you write, I know there's some songs on that album that I was like, where I wrote about something that I was really upset about, and then the tears later look back on it and be like, why was I mad about that?
Yeah. So,
I mean, is it still that fresh when you play a song that is inspired by a specific thing? Like, after playing it so many times, you kind of lose that kind of initial emotion that you had in it? Or, I mean, is it kind of being reminded about it every time you have to play it?
I think it's the latter. I like, especially with the EP songs that we're playing now. We play three new songs off the EP every night, and every time playing them, I'm just like, this is hard playing these. Like, this just happened. Like, this all just happened.
Yeah.
And even, like, when we hear people call out stuff in the crowd, I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah. And certain nights, if, like, there's definitely moments for me where if we're all, like, vibing off of each other on stage really hard, then it'll kind of, and you start thinking about the song, it'll kick in even harder.
Yeah.
So if you kind of lock eyes with everybody and everybody's like, I'm playing this really well, we sound really good, I'm in the zone right now. And then, so, yeah.
I gotta think that, yeah, obviously, yeah, there's an emotional element when you perform, but I have to think, too, that you have to disconnect somewhat, because it'd just be humiliating.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? I mean, because you're singing about these personal things in front of hundreds of people.
I think it's honestly, we might have disconnected and not realized it, or we might just trust our fans a lot.
Yeah, like, that is a big part of it.
All of our shows, like, everyone who comes to the shows, and this tour especially, I feel like we've seen a lot of just encouragement and, like, supportive attitude between every band. And it's just really great. So by the time we get on stage, we're not nervous. We're just there to hang out.
I think the only times that have been really scary in regards to that are, like, knowing that we had played headline shows before and we know we, like, have fans, but then maybe going out on a support tour, like the Wonder Years tour or the Say Anything tour, and being, like, the first band to play for these people who came to see somebody else. And it's not just they haven't heard us before, but, like, we're saying all this really specific,
and
weird
they're probably
stuff.
Like, these guys are weird. Yeah.
But then it usually goes okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw you guys on that Wonder Years tour in Chicago, and it seemed like there was a pretty good crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, were you first on that?
Yeah.
I think you guys were first on that.
Yeah,
show.
Chicago, we were first on that tour.
And it's, you know, I think you went on, like, at 5 o'clock or something.
Yeah.
there was already a pretty good crowd of people for you. It seems like you guys tour quite a bit. And I know, you know, we're recording this the day after Thanksgiving, and I saw on Twitter that you actually spent Thanksgiving here in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
When you're spending holidays on the road, is that sad on any level, or are you
dead inside?
Well, I just mean, you know, like, obviously you guys are all friends too, so I could see it being great. Like, what's that like, I guess, traveling so much, even when you might be away from your family or something on a holiday? Mm-hmm.
It's definitely difficult. We've never held that back either. We've never been like, touring's the best. It's the easiest thing you can do.
Yeah.
It's definitely difficult. And especially the amount that we've done it the past 2 years, it's been very difficult. This is actually our second year in a row without Thanksgiving at home. But like you said, we're like family at this point. And both years we've been lucky enough to spend it with like a great tour package.
Yeah.
Yesterday, everyone, it was just like a potluck. It was the best. The best.
When you can get the whole tour package to be on the same page of, like, you know, this year we might not be with our families, but we have, like, all of each other. And when that kind of clicks in everybody's head, then it's really cool.
Yeah.
So as long as, I don't know, like, everybody made their own thing that they make the best in the hotel, and then we all brought it out and ate it together, and it was just,
it was
like,
great.
I mean, cool. And you don't have to name any names here, but is that a unique thing to have, where you have four bands and they're all cool, and there aren't any, because it seems unlikely that, you know, there wouldn't be like at least one jerk or something.
We've been very lucky with all the bands that we've toured with, honestly. Very few jerks.
Yeah.
Ian's probably the biggest jerk.
Thanks.
Yeah, we've been so lucky with that. Our last tour was with Knuckle Puck, and it was Knuckle Puck crying, Foxing, and Somos. And though we just spent dinner with Knuckle Puck and everyone showed up later, it was still great.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's just situational with, like, getting 25 people, like, at the same hotel at the same time, and arranging a lot of that stuff. So some tours it's harder to get everyone together to hang out and have a good time if you're in, like, different types of vehicles. But when you can, usually whenever you can get everyone in the same room, then everyone's like, oh,
this is why we do this.
This is cool. So,
when you tour so much, is it a matter of, like, this is how we make our living and that's why we have to tour? Or is there an idea that, like, you know, if we tour this hard right now, we will build towards something, and in 5 years we're going to hit this goal in our head? I mean, what is the, do you have like a master plan in that regard?
At this point,
like, for world domination, yeah. This is like phase one.
That's kind of how it feels. Yeah. Just like endless touring. I think it was more so like we just like doing it, and we really wanted something that we realized pretty quick into like seeing success is that we could see the world via modern baseball.
Yeah.
So why not?
And also now with us being in the position that we can bring out other bands, that's a whole other level of like being able to, getting excited about exposing our fans to music that we really like that they may have not heard before. And that's a really neat experience because we have so many friends who start bands all the time, so it's kind of like...
They're way better than us, and no one knows about it.
Yeah. It's like, what are these idiots doing here? They came here for us. But it's cool to, you know, have the opportunity to bring out our friends and show them to the world also.
And then... As far as, like, the money end of thing, I think it is nice to talk about this occasionally. Like, we just, like, the money that we make off touring, we flip into, like, building a studio.
Right, yeah.
Like, buying a laptop to do better things, like, do more Illustrator stuff. Like, we all have our things that we love doing outside of modern baseball, and this kind of just amplifies that for us.
Yeah, it's really neat. Like...
Was someone out the window?
Yeah.
They're all right there. Yep.
Is that the candy man? All right. Oh, we'll be all right.
Yeah. But it's cool. It does help us out a lot. Like Brendan said, me and Ian really love recording music. We engineered the first two records, and because we tour so much, we were able to fund building a recording studio at home while we were between tours. So now we have like this whole other place to create music and record other bands that we like. And
did I read that you're majoring in music industry? which I didn't know that was a major.
Terrible name for a major.
This stuff that we couldn't label right.
Right. Yeah.
This is a thing that may not exist in 5 years.
Exactly. Yeah. We're majoring in iTunes. but what we're actually studying is like music engineering in a studio.
Right.
So, which is a lot of fun. We like it a lot.
See, that seems like a real skill. More
yeah, it's
music
neat.
Industry.
It feels kind of like a trade as far as like the way our education went. You're in the studio in a lot of your classes, like placing microphones, recording things, doing projects. So,
and especially it's very fun now knowing that they know this and going to venues and just being like watching them look at stuff. And I was like, yeah, this is funny.
And you know, you said before that you don't necessarily have like a master plan or anything, but it is. Pretty clear that you guys are on an arc, you know, and it's going upward right now. I mean, you've been playing increasingly larger venues. You're a headliner now. I mean, like a year ago, you were still playing support at bills. How has that affected how you look at the band? I mean, do you feel a sense of confidence from that? Do you feel emboldened to do things that you maybe didn't feel like you could do before, or does that external kind of gratification not affect you as far as how you look at the band?
I think if anything, it just gives us more confidence to be able to stretch our limits a little bit, to experiment and to test some.
Try different things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like instead of looking at it as like putting something out and seeing that people like it and saying, okay, we should do more of that. It's kind of every time we find out that somebody likes something, we'll be like, okay
so we can do the next step. Yeah.
And it makes it a lot more fun that way, because it's kind of just always, pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, so. And something we always loved about bands that we grew up with were that we grew up with them. As they grew as a band, we followed them. And kind of our fans, especially because we've been releasing music so frequently, our fans have kind of done that with us, and it's nice. Yeah. It definitely gives us a lot of confidence.
Well, and there's definitely, we've talked about that before, the aging that you've already done in your records. It doesn't seem like a long time necessarily from, like, sports in 2012, but, you know, are you both 23 right now?
22.
So, like, from, 1920 to 22, 23, that can be a pretty big change in life. I mean, aside from just, the maturation process, like, how else do you feel like you've evolved, since you started?
I think we run everything internally way smoother than we did. Just because when we were first starting, it was Jacob and I booking all the shows, like printing all the merch, like figuring all the stuff out, and growing in size and popularity, we grew with a team that kind of like jumped on pretty early, so we've grown with them. But
we always kept the team close. It was always like, if we can get one of our friends to do this, then we should do this. Or like, if we can get, if our booking agent can be the booking agent of the bands we've been on tour with, who say, like, you can trust this dude, he's a great dude, he booked this tour with you guys, then we're going to go with that. So there's definitely keeping it close-knit, for sure.
We've also paid very close attention to, I think a big part of our band is making sure our fans get what they are paying for. And with our increasing success, we've kind of talked about like moving past just playing a ton of songs really fast and kind of having a show. Things that like 2 years ago we would have been like,
fucking sell out.
Are
losers.
You serious? What are you talking about? But now that we're hitting the point where like our ticket minimums are $17, we're like, well, if I paid $17 for something, I want to get something out of it. Something that we learned from the Wonder Years. Like, there was like a $20 ticket, and you got that $20.
Right. Well, and I know they were doing like pre-show, like acoustic sets.
Right. Yeah. We tried that. It was not our thing.
We gave it a go.
It was really hard.
We got a banner.
Yeah.
We got a sound guy so that it sounds good.
Yeah, why is the banner important?
I don't know.
I like the banner for the, like, I feel like design and aesthetic has such a long, like, it goes hand in hand with, like, music. I feel like with, like, me, especially, I don't know as much as the rest of the band, like, I love doing the layouts and stuff like that because I feel like it has such a big part involved, and it just adds another piece to the story. I feel like our banner really helps that. You have, like, this stupid banner with these silly guys on stage, and the end of the banner says, everything happens for a reason, John 3:11, and you're like, I get these guys!
And the thing I always forget is it doesn't even have the actual band name.
No.
It just says MOBA.
Well, and there's a tradition of that, like, throughout punk history, the word brand is supposed to be a dirty word
in
punk circles, but at the same time, you have... going back to the Ramones. The Ramones have a great logo.
Yes.
And their shirt.
The logo.
Yeah, their shirt is arguably more popular than their record.
Yeah.
And it's like a way to, it seems like the bands that have survived, or the Descendants, and so many other bands that have just great logos, Dead Kennedys, and all the way down the list. And it's always kind of an interesting dichotomy a little bit.
Yeah, right.
And it helps you connect to that band to just have that image in your head. So
strange. Yeah, and like when we decided on the banner, we were so nitpicky about it for that said reason. We were just like, okay, we can't have a stupid banner. We're not gonna have just our band name be on it and like our logo. We can't just do that. We're like, dog.
We're gonna put some thought.
What could we do with a dog?
Dog with sunglasses.
We're close.
Fake Bible quote.
Change our name. Done. Print it.
It is interesting to talk about like that whole process though, and being very sort of self-aware about connecting with an audience, because I know like when I wrote about you guys a couple years ago.
Thank you for that.
Thank you for, well, hey, you're a great band, so you write about great bands. But I'm always struck by how there are bands that get a lot of media attention that don't necessarily like sell a lot of records or even like sell a lot of concert tickets. Mm-hmm. And then there's other bands that do really well on the road, sell a good number of records, and yet don't get the media attention. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be, like, for some bands, it seems like it's like almost like if you get the review in Pitchfork, that's what you're really almost more concerned about than mm-hmm. anything else. And my impression is that that's something that you never counted on, even though now you're starting to get some of that media attention. That
yeah, and I feel like that was kind of our mindset, and is still our mindset, which makes us so interactive with our fans, is we never expected to be on Pitchfork or Grantland.
Yeah. Or
he just made like a religious, like, what is that, like the cross or something?
Yeah, just rest in peace.
An R.I.P.
We never expected any of that, especially with like the music that we were writing. And to kind of have that extra push, it's like, why not put the effort that we have, if all this stuff is so graciously coming to us, like talking about the press that is, why not put our extra energy as a band to kind of focus on our fans having a better experience? Yeah.
I mean, is that the future of rock and roll in a way? Because, you know, we talk a lot about how, and this is one of the themes of the podcast, talking about, like, the state of rock and all that. And people often talk about how rock music isn't really pop music anymore. You're not seeing rock bands on TV or on magazine covers. There's no rock band that's the equivalent to Beyonce or something.
Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time,
looking at you, Dave Grohl.
yeah, maybe Dave Grohl. But, I mean, it seems like the bands that are doing really well right now are focused more on their audience and not necessarily trying to, you know, be this sort of like mass product type thing.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something you guys think about at all? And do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think we definitely think about that a lot. A lot of the bands that we really look up to and that influence the way that we want to shape this band really focus on their fans. Against Me is a huge one for me. Like, they try to do as many free things as they can in every state that they can, as many in stores. They, like, try to do as many, like, Q&As, AMAs, whatever. And Laura's always doing press, and I think that's so cool. And then, like, to see Against Me live and then get 20 songs in under an hour, you're like, okay, I just got it all. That was great. And thinking of that and us getting close to that 20 songs in an hour is kind of one of those things that we've strived for. Just and I do think that is kind of the new way that people look at it, making, like, bands just want to make their fans happy.
Yeah. And even, I don't want to say, like, in this day and age, but in this day and age when you can do so many things from, like, a seat in front of your computer, and then compare that to the effort it takes to get in your car, drive somewhere, spend money, stand on your feet for, like, 3 hours while you watch a show, that's, like, I don't know, it means a lot to play to a room of, you know, 500, 600, 1,000 people who all did that.
When they
for
could all
you.
Be watching us on PlayStation Network.
Yeah. watching on PlayStation. Yeah. So when you think about it in the context of, I don't know, today, it's really, it means a lot. Well, and, you know, a lot of them are kids, too.
Right. So. Well, especially with this kind of music where it's so much about human connection and whether you see a band live or you play a record and you feel like, oh, this person on this record is describing something that I felt, and it could be a really powerful connection, you know, when you can make that. That's
feels
not really
nice.
A question. I'm just rhapsodizing.
Yeah.
Right now. I mean, you know, and this is, I know this was not your intent when this happened, but, you know, you've been very open about, you know, your anxiety and feeling depression, and there, you know, you ended up canceling some concert dates because of that, but you know, you could have made up some excuse that bands often make, that, you know, I'm exhausted, or, you know, or something like that, but you were very upfront.
I dropped my phone in the river, I gotta go back, we can't continue the tour.
But, you know, exhaustion is like the common, that's like the, okay, well, they're either in rehab or they're, you know, something. And you were very honest about what was going on in your life, and it seemed like that became an opportunity for fans to talk about their own struggles with that.
And we are also happy about how supportive everyone has been of me and us continuing through this. And I think we're all, it gives us all a little tingle, like having people reach out to us.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to talk to some people during shows about it, it's just really nice. Just letting people know that it's okay to talk about, and it's okay to need help, and it's okay to want help.
Well, there's something also human about that. You know, I feel like, you know, if you listen to, you know, I like a lot of pop music. You know, I'm not knocking it, but there is, but there is sort of like a, you know, I'm trying to find the right word. You know, it's untouchable. There's something, yeah, you know, you talk about, if you look at Beyonce, you're like, this woman is perfect.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never going to be like
she's
this
person. She's better than Jay-Z. Like,
that's not me.
Yeah.
You know, she looks amazing. She's, you know, making amazing records,
yeah,
you know, and you don't necessarily think, well, this is a human being that, yeah, I am in any way similar to. And certainly, you know, again, like another thing I connected to when I first heard your band was that, okay, these people remind me of where I was at, and still am in a lot of ways, you know, singing about insecurities and,
yeah,
and the sort of unattractive parts of yourself, in a kind of honest way. I think that's something people always want from music.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Because it's sometimes stuff that you're scared to talk about with a real person, but if you can be by yourself and feel comforted, just by your headphones or whatever you're listening to, that's a special experience. If you're too scared to talk to your parents or you're too scared to talk to your friends about something, but if you can hear somebody say it on a record, that
still
definitely
sounds like it's being,
yeah,
said to you.
Yeah.
And I think you just pulled out what we started Modern Baseball for.
Yeah.
We started Mobo to be our journals.
Yeah.
Like, we really wanted to just like kind of let everything out, and we didn't realize that it would take the turn that it did, especially giving, when people come up to us and say that they have the confidence to like get help or that they've like anything relating to that, it's really, it feels amazing. And to think that Modern Baseball, from your dad's like basement to now, is just really weird. It's really crazy.
I mean, is there a moment in particular that really crystallized that for you, that like, wow, this band might mean something like a lot to people out there?
I think it was honestly when we canceled those shows.
Yeah, that was that, to read the, to go, it was kind of a strange series of events, because like we decided that we were gonna do it, and then it was like, how are we gonna plan to announce it, and then there was like the preparation and then the actual announcement.
Yeah.
So by the time the announcement happened, we had kind of like processed it and we're thinking about it for a while, but then
We're still separated because I was at home in treatment,
right. But then to like look at the Facebook comments on that post was,
I mean, can I ask, like, did you like go to a hospital for that?
Yeah, basically, we as a band and by we decided, I mean, more so everyone was like, it's time for you to get help. We can't watch you do this to yourself anymore. Because I was at the point where I was cutting, and I had a like very abusive cutting behavior. I had a ton of substance abuse with alcohol. And it was just getting overwhelming. And touring was kind of like the answer to that, because I would get on the road and we would be together and I wouldn't have like that anxiety anymore, but that time at home, I couldn't live like that.
Yeah.
So Jake called my mom one night, and my mom showed up to my house and was like, hey, it's time for you to come home and get some help. So I went home. I spent several weeks in a part-time program at the hospital in the county that I grew up in, or lived, where we started the band, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And then 2 days ago was 4 months without me drinking.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I was in treatment for the time leading up to Holy Ghost, like all the time to us leading up to Holy Ghost, and canceling those tour dates, even though it was really, really hard, obviously, because we worked really hard for Australia, too.
Yeah, and like, it was always like the...
Yeah, and we made... No one will ever know this until now. We made shirts that were like Modern Baseball, Metallica, World Tour, and it just had the two Reading and Leeds dates on the back. Because we were on the same day as them. And so there was obviously a lot of downfalls. But it was really, really for the best. And I came out of treatment with a better mindset, properly medicated for my bipolar disorder, and here we are now, and wow. I feel better than ever. Yeah.
I mean, was that a tough phone call to make? I mean, because I imagine on some level you're like...
Well, listen to this, too. He told my mom that I smoke weed.
I did tell my mom. That was probably the biggest...
That was the funniest thing. Yeah, that was definitely like the...
It's always like a scary thing... For your parents to find out. You don't want them to know.
No.
But it's sort of like, oh,
it's so close, though.
Yeah.
Intellectually, you know.
Intellectually,
you know, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah. But then you feel like, oh, are they going to, is she going to think I'm a dirtbag or something?
They took it pretty well, honestly. They're like, not in our state. It's basically what they said. Don't do it.
Because sometimes that can be hard. To say that to your friend, you don't want to feel like you're overstepping, but then you're also obviously concerned.
It was that calling your mom was the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. Not just like talk, like because I have to talk to your mom, like friends obviously, but like to feel like I had to was. Really, I don't know, kind of scary. It was kind of hard to accept. But, I don't know.
Worth it.
Yeah, it was worth it.
So this would have been this
August.
Summer? It was August.
Yeah.
And, like, was there at any point fear that, like, the band was not going to stay together?
I mean, in my mind, no. I don't know what everyone else thought.
I mean, there's obviously bigger concerns in the moment, but so that was never like a passing thought, like, well, maybe we're going to break up now?
No, just because it was kind of like this was how to deal with that.
Yeah.
And it always seemed like...
I know you said that, like, you know, the band saved your life.
It did. And it has, and it will continue to.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, that, you know, you would talk about canceling the dates being sort of a, you know, in a way being a positive turning point because it's a way for people to express how much the band means.
Yeah.
And you feel, okay, then it's almost like a sense of mission maybe in a way.
It was. It definitely was. Because we obviously...
It's like we got to cancel more dates more often.
Why are we touring? Yeah. It's like that thing. We should just break up and come back in a year.
Yeah. Fake van robbery.
That's not cool.
Jeff.
Yeah, it was the cancel, it like we were saying too, it was so hard to do because he made up his mind immediately that we were canceling the dates. And I was like set in stone, like, oh, we're still going, right? And he was like, no, we're gonna be off until...
Well, there's always that show business thing of like, we cannot cancel a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Under any circumstances. Yeah.
And that was definitely what I was saying to everyone as kind of a scapegoat to get out of going to treatment. Because at first, especially because it was like one of those things that the beginning steps for me, I had to like actually accept going because someone else was helping guide me through the whole process. Like accepting going was the hardest part and accepting help was the hardest part, especially when Australia was flickering in my face like a world away, but still I was just like, oh gosh, guys, come on. Like, I promise I'll go to bed earlier.
Yeah. Like,
and like when you were in treatment, were you writing during that time?
No, that was when Holy Ghost got tricky. Because
like, were those songs already written, like you were gonna record, like had you started recording yet?
No, so basically what happened is we got home from tour with Say Anything in the beginning of August. I kind of within 2 weeks went back into my old ways, and then a week later all of the stuff went down, like how I got to treatment and everything started happening.
And before all that, we had booked studio time.
Yes.
Okay.
So the studio time was also kind of looming in the distance.
Yeah, which everyone was kind of like, we're going to cancel these days, but we have to do this record. Like, it plans out the next part of our year. Also, we already put the checks out. Like, we were like, we already paid for this. This needs to happen. But everyone was obviously like, we want you to take your time, and we want this recording process to be as casual as possible. Mm-hmm. I might have taken the casual part a little too far. Because I didn't write my half of the record until we got into the studio with everyone, because I planned on writing it when we were home, from the beginning of August until the end of August, and then we would go into the studio in September, and then we'd head to Australia, and that was it. But being in treatment and really wanting to focus on treatment, I didn't do anything else. I'd wake up at like an actual time at 8, and I would go to bed at like an actual time, 10. To kind of get myself ready, especially for this tour, where it was just like a bunch of fucking idiots touring together for 7 weeks. Yeah. A bunch of people that I knew were going to be very reckless together. But we went to the studio, we cranked out Jake's songs, and then we went, well, I guess it's time for you to finish your songs, Brendan, and then maybe we'll finish this record. A few days later, that happened, and
we did it.
Sean wrote and recorded all of his drum parts in 2 days.
Wow.
We got in the room, set up all the drum mics, got our amps going, and Brendan was just like, here's a riff. And then we would write a song.
And then
record it.
And then I would write the lyrics later, because we just didn't have the time to wait around for me to write the lyrics.
And, I mean, is it fair to assume that a lot of lyrics have to do with going to treatment and those experiences?
I left a lot of the going to treatment out of it, because a lot of the themes on Holy Ghost is that you're not alone, and you can you're never alone. Like, someone's always there with you to help you. So there were lyrics and songs that I knew had to be scrapped to get that idea across, because Jake's half was perfect for that vibe.
Yeah.
And there was one song that we cut from the record called Stanger Rises, which is half Saint Anger, half The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, and I read it again. I read about this song in Spin. Spin did a story about sort of recording in the followed you guys in the studio. And okay, so you're gonna dangle a song that you describe that. So, I mean, the song will be released just as a B-side, but
yes,
not on the record.
Yes, yeah, we definitely, we want to do something like, it's obnoxiously punk. Yeah. We want to do something obnoxiously punk with it as well. But that is a song specifically that's like, get me the hell out of treatment. I don't know why any of you all thought I would be able to do this or thought I would want to come here. Well, all the other songs are like, this is a great idea.
Like, so almost like this stuff that's too despairing, you're like, well,
I wanted to save that kind of.
Yeah. See, now I'm just thinking of all these parallels between Saint Anger and Holy Ghost, where, you know, like, is it like, you know, does your lifestyle determine your death style? I'm just trying to think of, because I assume you've seen Some Kind of Monster.
Yes.
Like, are you guys Metallica fans?
I am. I don't
You're
think
shaking
he's listened
your head.
To Metallica before.
I know Enter Sandman.
literally laughed at you.
You're a Metallica fan.
Yeah, and I've seen Some Kind of Monster.
Okay.
There was the whole time I was watching it, I was like, what are they doing? These guys are in the band?
I love the part where Kirk Hammett, though, like, defends guitar solos.
Yes!
And it's actually, it sounds like a very Spinal Tap type thing, if I describe it that way, but he actually makes a very good argument, because they were trying to, like, Hetfield and Ulrich were like, you know, we don't want guitar solos, because that's not very now, like, you know, guitars, they're out of fashion, and he's like, no, I want solos, because it'll date the record to now if I don't have solos. And it's like, yeah, that's actually a really sound argument.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
Yeah. Little did he know that it would have like the worst drum sounds ever on Saint Anger. Like, we the drum sound, it's like the worst is
ever.
It's awful.
That. We were talking about that and reinventing Axl Rose. It's like such a, like Jeff Rosenstock and I were talking last night, it's such a big record for us. Like Ian showed me it when we first became a band, and that's how I got into Against Me. And I was just like, this record is incredible, but what's up with this snare sound? Gaga!
Well, in reinventing Axl Rose, did that come out in 01?
02?
So that's around. So maybe there was just something in 02 or 03.
Something in the snare water.
We're like, it's like, let's experiment. And let's have the worst drum sounds, and maybe it'll actually be awesome if we have terrible drum sounds. Now, I haven't heard Holy Ghost yet, obviously, but you know, I've heard the EP, The Perfect Cast, which I think is awesome.
Thank you.
And it is, from what I've from how I've heard Holy Ghost described, it sounds like The Perfect Cast is in a way a transition, because the sound of it is very much beefed up from You're Gonna Miss It All. It has like a bigger kind of rock sound, and yet lyrically it's very much a piece with that record. I mean, from the way Holy Ghost has been described, it sounds like you're kind of going for like a bigger rock sound.
We definitely want a bigger sound. And going into that, we knew it wasn't going to be hard to accomplish, because it was the first record with guitar pedals.
Yeah.
Like, it was just...
And a producer.
Yeah. Our band kind of, like...
And you guys started playing in coffee houses, right? When you were...
Yeah.
I mean, because there's definitely a folky element...
Totally.
To, you know, to and the early records.
A lot of
and
that...
That's good, and that's not at all on the EP.
Yeah.
There's, like, I don't think... I mean, is there any acoustic guitar on the EP?
No.
No.
Because I feel like Thrash Particle kind of starts off with voice and guitar for a while, but it's electric guitar.
Yeah, and Revenge of the Nameless Ranger is probably the folkiest thing on that.
Yeah.
But that's just like the weaker than ZZ Core progression.
It's like when I really realized that when I put on The Perfect Cast in my car, and I was playing it, and I was like, well, yeah, this sounds like way bigger. Because when you play it on a laptop, it doesn't necessarily...
It doesn't rock your vibe.
But it's like, yeah, this is using more parts of my stereo than other modern baseball records.
Yeah. You know,
the kick drum is like, I'm feeling
it. It's not just like...
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of hitting me in the back.
That's something as a band we... Like, going back to us maturing, the band maturing, we always said that we wanted our following release to sound better than the one prior to it.
Right.
And now that we're at the state that we are, playing the rooms that we are with our the popularity that we have, we are kind of able to actually have that time in the studio and actually...
Figure out how to one-up ourselves.
Yeah. This. And having Joe Reinhart as our producer, who did Hop Along and Joyce Manor, and who plays in Hop Along, was great. He was on the same page as us. He was basically the same person we were all. And just so talented that he was able to push all of us at our instruments. We're a very picky band, just because Jake and Ian can record us. And up until... You're Gonna Miss It All, we did all of our own records.
Yeah.
So to trust someone was a big step for us, and Joe was definitely the right call.
Yeah.
Like 100%.
That was my favorite recording experience
ever.
We've ever had. Yeah.
I mean, do you think in terms of like, hey, maybe we should try to get a radio single or anything like that? Are you thinking in those terms, or is there an element of like, we want to be popular, but not too popular. We want to kind of try to manage it a little bit. I mean, do you think about that at all? And what are your feelings on that right now?
I think we are going to accept the amount of popularity that we get.
Yeah.
We're not going to fight it. We might even help push it along. But I think our main objective with releasing any new material is topping ourselves. And if not topping ourselves, at least developing as individual musicians.
Yeah.
Really been... And especially going into Holy Ghost, we are all at the top of our game as far as us just being able to play our instruments. Because we've always been a very casually sloppy band.
Yeah. But we had been on tour for so long after going into the studio that we finally, like, we had all developed our own kind of styles in each of our instruments, and to have a producer there who could individually lead us down our own path so that we each did the best that we could. He would, like, kind of listen to us play through songs and then realize what direction we were going in and then, like, hone in on that and make it the best that it could be.
Yeah.
So. Especially with Ian, like, prior to Holy Ghost 2, Jake wrote almost every single instrument for every song, except for, like, my rhythms for the songs I would sing. And going into Holy Ghost and everyone writing their own parts, and everyone, like, working really, really hard to get everything as tight as possible, I think is why it's also our favorite Modern Baseball record.
Yeah.
By far. Yeah, it's funny getting masters now on the road and just being like, it's so long.
Yeah, because there's like 4 minute songs on here.
Yeah, that was another thing
that's
too.
That's like November rain for you.
Yes, it really is.
Which one of you wrote that lyric about the DIY line, like the asshole with an iPhone? Like,
that was guilty.
I mean, is that something that, I mean, did that sort of silence that part of the fan base? Or do you get people who are like, you know, I saw you guys play a house show, and now you're playing, you know, this venue with like 500 people, and it's not as good?
I feel kind of bad because, like, when I wrote it, it wasn't even... it wasn't even like a big Modern Baseball feeling of like rejection after getting kind of popular. It was more like just a specific personal experience with something that was happening even before we were playing like bigger shows or anything. But I don't know. It's kind of, it's weird because you don't realize those kinds of things until you come home from tour.
Yes.
Because when we were coming up as a band playing in Philly, we played Philly like every week, and we would not really go on tour for a long period of time because we didn't, like, you know, we were like a tiny band. And then when you're there and you're so involved and you're seeing everyone like every Saturday night, you feel like you're in it, obviously, but then you leave for 4 months.
And everyone forgets your name.
Everyone forgets, and you come back, and it's just like, I don't know. It's, and a lot of it is probably mental, too, is you just kind of feel like you've abandoned your community a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is such a complex thing to try to handle, because it's like, when you were there before, everyone was supporting your band, they wanted you to be successful, they're coming to see your shows, and then you leave, and that's kind of the goal, but also you feel like
you left everyone.
You left everybody, and you're not contributing to the community anymore. So, I don't know.
Our answer to that was the EP.
Yeah.
Bands like the Menzingers do holiday shows. Ted of White, same thing. But we were like, we have songs that we knew weren't going to go on the record that we wanted to release. We might as well release it for free.
Yeah.
And a lot of people from Philly were hitting us up.
Yeah,
being like, this is sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of our, like, people, like...
And it came out on Lame-O.
Yeah, and it came out on Lame-O. Our friend Ruben, who booked so many of our first shows in and out of Pennsylvania, he hit us up being like, damn, good job. Just like, good job. It sounds great. The songs are great. Y'all rock. Keep rocking. And it's just like, yeah.
But like, Holy Ghost now is going to be like $29.95. Right? Because you gave this one, it's like you got this one for free.
Yeah.
We're cashing in on the record, man.
Yeah. It's a 30-minute record, but there's 3 12-inches. It's going to be $35.
Yeah. Five CDs.
Yeah, five CDs for one 30-minute. Yeah.
All right, that was Modern Baseball. Really great conversation. So glad that Brendan and Jake were able to join me. And by the way, Holy Ghost, I've been able to hear it since we recorded this interview, and it's a really fabulous record, and I think you all are going to like it once that finally comes out. Guys, the best advertising for a podcast like this is word of mouth. So if you like what we're doing here,
I'd really appreciate it if you could tell your friends, talk about it on social media, and if you have time, you know, post a review on iTunes or just give us a rating. All these things will really help the podcast grow and help us get the word out. If you want to know more about our podcast, you can head over to Twitter. We're on there. You can find us at Cella Rock Pod. Again, that's C-E-L-E Rock Pod. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening this week, and we'll see you next week.